May the spirit of life and love be with us in this hour and in each hour of our lives. Blessed be. Shalom. Amen. In our house, Tuesday night is taco night. I call it taco night, which is funny because nobody has tacos. The truth is that I have a burrito and my children, who are 8 and almost 5, have quesadillas. Taco sort of in between a burrito and a quesadilla, if you will, and taco alliterates to Tuesday, so there you go. Tuesday night is taco night. Having a habit, a routine, keeps things simple. This week, though, very exciting. This last week, we had a guest for taco night, and so I asked in advance, what do you like on your tacos? Refried beans. Oh, good. I like refried beans. I don't usually make it for taco night, but it's easy to make, no problem. So I went shopping and I got some to go along with the usual ingredients, ground turkey and cheese and olives and red peppers and tomatoes and salsa and the avocados and the lime to make the guacamole, which I make from scratch, and I pick up a can of refried beans. And Tuesday, I got back from a Transform Rockford meeting and I sent the babysitter home and I started dinner right away, burritos for adults, quesadillas for kids, and you know where the can of refried beans is, don't you? It's right there on the shelf on my pantry, sitting right there unused. Didn't think about it till the next morning and woke up and I thought, oh darn, I was gonna use the refried beans, I forgot all about it. And my very next thought was, of course, that'll make a perfect sermon illustration. I'm a little off, you know that. That's exactly, I thought, what Sunday's message is all about, the power of habit. It's not my habit to make beans. And so I would have to stop and think and remember and use my conscious mind and read the instructions and remember to change the recipe. And chances of that happening with a hungry adult and 2 hungry children and the end of a long day, zilch. 0. Not gonna happen. Habit can be a lifesaver. I can make a good balanced meal without really thinking about it. Habit gets me to church without thinking about the route. It guides my feet while I run and it types my passwords. It's more than these basic life functions, though. I have habits of daily time for prayer and reflection each morning as my tea cools. I have habits to talk to my friends at certain times. I read stories to my kids before they fall asleep and try to begin almost every conversation with the important part, how are you? And yeah, a habit to come to worship. Long before I was a minister, I had that habit. It's Sunday, let's go to church. Didn't think about it. Habits can be life savers, time savers, and energy savers. Now, we get stuck in habit and go along without thinking about it. This can cause problems, more serious problems than forgetting to make the refried beans. Problems of personal living. Problems with the structure of society, problems with the health of our spirit. This month, we're wondering together, what does it mean to be a people of tradition? And sometimes we think that we are the religion without tradition. We are the bold explorers, not like those other hidebound faiths, but that is, I have to tell you, completely bogus. We have traditions too, but we are just unaware of them. They're habits, unconscious traditions. So today's invitation is to make our habits conscious. Think about them. Reconsider whether they serve us well, like that spring cleaning that Nikki talked about, to choose which ones we want to keep. And then with intention and purpose, to make new and better habits when we can. To move from unaware to self-aware to purpose. To avoid the temptation, the idolatry of doing things that way because we've always done them, and that's good enough. To instead be faithful risk takers, to be the kind of people who throw away the breadcrumbs, are willing to find the house and not be afraid. Try them. Green eggs and ham, you might like them. You may discover, despite all your assumptions of habit, that they're delicious. Don't be afraid of some change. So let me give you some examples of what it might mean to question your habits and create new and better ones. A friend of mine once told me that ain't nobody can push your buttons like them that sewed them on. And I love that phrase, because it's so true. Someone in a family relationship, a child or a parent or spouse or a sibling, and they're in a pattern you don't like and you feel trapped. You keep having your buttons pushed, keep reacting the same way, and nobody can push your buttons like them that sewed them on. In one family, everybody had the habit of gossip. If the sister was dating a loser, and in mom's opinion, she always was, well, everyone else heard about it. The brother, the dad, the aunt, the grandfather, the neighbor, the coworker, everyone except the sister, of course. You didn't talk directly to the person, only behind their back. And when the mom started drinking too much too often, the whole family talked about it, but not with her. When the aunt got a new job, they all talked about it at length, not with her, but everybody shared their opinions about whether it was a good fit or not. The grandfather's health scare was discussed endlessly unless he was there. That wouldn't be polite. So he was in the dark about what they thought he should do. Until one day, the brother brought his new boyfriend home. They had gossiped about him being gay a long time ago, and they were pretty much over that. That was old gossip. They liked new gossip. That was much more exciting. They liked the boyfriend, but then the family started to talk smack about the neighbor, about how they dressed or did their lawn or some other trivial thing. And the boyfriend, he cleared his throat, and he said, "Gee, in my family, we don't talk about people when they're not there." Silence. And a hasty change of subject. That is a brave boyfriend. Whenever the boyfriend was around, they followed the rule. They knew that gossip was no good and the criticism of each other was worse and the secrets were worse than that, but it was just their habit. They didn't even know that they could break it. Eventually, they stopped doing it in front of the brother, too. Even when the boyfriend wasn't there, nothing needed to be said, but they just figured he probably agreed with the boyfriend, which more or less he did. Then something remarkable happened. Neither the boyfriend or the brother were there. The mom and dad sitting on the porch started to gossip about the grandfather's health again, and the sister spoke up. "I think we should talk to him about it directly, don't you?" "Well, how about that?" Family systems are patterns, and we all do them. Criticism, manners, addiction, gossip, helpfulness, codependence, kindness, all these things, good and bad, are habits. And we can become conscious of them and change them. It usually happens through the addition of someone outside the system who comes in and asks questions, or through family therapy, which works in a similar way. But sometimes people do it on their own. Changes in behavior over time break down old habits and make new ones. It can change. And that gives all of us a lot of hope. I've seen families change their patterns, and even when the whole family doesn't, when they go on doing what they've always done, when one person stops taking the bait, when one person throws away the breadcrumbs, they can step out of the cycle and live a healthier life and stop having those buttons pushed all the time. If you feel trapped by your family habits, I want you to know that you can change how you participate in them and respond to them. You can. The first step is to become aware of them and to name them to yourself and to others over and over again and say, "That's the pattern, that's the pattern, there it is, name it." And then start changing how you personally respond. You might not change anybody else, but you change how you respond. Be intentional, be aware, until your new way of being is so ingrained in how you are that you don't have to struggle to be the person that you want to be, because now it's your new habit. It isn't easy, but folks do it all the time, and you can too. It isn't just individuals and families that have habits, of course. Cities and nations can have them too, and often do. When we do things without thinking about them, when we don't question our assumptions, or I should say, when the majority doesn't listen to the powerful questions of those excluded from their assumptions, these are social habits. These social habits range from everything to how close we stand to each other when we're talking to each other, how and what we eat, the way we read and make money and live our lives, the places we live and shop and play and more. All social habits. I've been thinking, of course, this week, as I know many of you have, about what's been happening in Baltimore. So many people trying to love their city, care for it, peaceful protesters speaking up against centuries-long oppression, disenfranchisement and violence committed by those in power against those without, in particular by whites in power against African Americans without, in that city in particular, although of course it's nationwide. The few who resort to violence, their frustration too great to be appeased by calls for patience. Nobody seems to notice, they think, when they protest peacefully, but an uprising makes the news. A big part of those habits of oppression that folks are protesting, as in many American cities, is abusive police tactics. In Baltimore, it's what's called the rough ride. To put a suspect handcuffed behind their back in a steel box in the back of a van with no seatbelt and drive around for an hour, hitting every pothole, braking hard, starting fast, taking corners as quickly as possible. That's what severed Freddie Gray's spine and killed him. The city of Baltimore has paid $6 million to settle cases of police violence in the last 4 years alone. And Freddie Gray is only one of many deaths of suspects in custody. And we're not talking about he pulled a gun or I thought he was about to pull a gun, not even that. We're talking about he was already in handcuffs, already in custody, and yet was beaten to death without a hand laid on him. I know that a lot of those protesting this violence in Baltimore and in Ferguson and in Chicago and all over the country feel this is just the way cops are. I've heard that from folks all the time. This is just the way they are. But I tell them, no, it isn't. No, it isn't. It's the culture of some departments in some cities, but it doesn't have to be. And when it is, it can change. I am not hopeless about this. Take as an example the city of Rockford. I'm going to use Rockford as a positive example, so don't freak out, because I know that's not the way we talk about our city, but we can. It's not perfect, but talk to any leader in the Black community in this town, and I talk to a lot of them all the time, had this conversation last week, and they will tell you without hesitation that the department has changed in the last 10 years. New habits, new procedures, new training, new expectations, and over time, the new habits just become the way we do things. And not everyone will agree with every change, and some folks will always feel treated badly no matter what happens, and politics and the struggle for power and personality conflicts threaten to get in the way. It is a work in progress, no doubt about that, and nobody's perfect. But I want to tell you that we can sing the praises of the Rockford Police Department for being willing to engage this work seriously. The cops in this town don't do rough rides, and they don't beat suspects in custody. And even though it is a hard, stressful job, harder than a lot of us can imagine, almost all of them treat people with dignity and respect almost every time. Habits matter, and they can change. They can change. They changed in Rockford because of an intervention, like the boyfriend in the family who showed up at the table and asked a challenging question. We called in an outsider, the Department of Justice, and then actually listened to most of their recommendations. I could spend the whole sermon on this topic, of course, but what I want to say is that it is my hope and my prayer that other cities across the country will get an intervention, will make new habits and stick to them. One of the reasons it's so good that the prosecutor in Baltimore filed charges is it says, this isn't the way we do things. This isn't the way that policing is done. It begins to change habits. And then, when this shiny object of violence simmers down, when we begin to make some changes, then comes the harder work. Because truthfully, that's a symptom of a wider issue. So we'll need to build on new habits that we're making in criminal justice to make other new habits, habits that we have neglected for hundreds of years, about neighborhood redevelopment and jobs creation and healthcare access and education quality and income distribution and so on and so forth. All those things that are closer to the root that keep this, unfortunately, a racist country. The conditions which make neighborhoods war zone and the police the occupiers, instead of conditions which make all of us, white and brown and black and blue, all citizens together, as it should be. Racism is a social habit, and one we can break, but only with concerted effort, and there is no excuse for delay. I want to give one more example of a habit you can break and become conscious of and then reform so you can be the kind of person you want to be. And I'll keep it brief because it's pretty obvious. I'm talking about your spiritual habits, in particular, coming to church for worship. Some of you have the habit of coming pretty much every week, and you've come pretty much every week in some cases for decades upon decades and decades. Unless you're sick or traveling, you're here. Others of us, we do not quite have this habit. Here's the invitation I want to offer. Make it a habit. Here's what I know about spiritual habits, whatever they might be. You need to create them and stop thinking about them. When I have to think each morning, oh, I should do my prayer time, well, sometimes I forget. More often I forget than I remember. But when my body remembers, you breathe in the tea, I smell the tea, I remember. Now it's time to pray. It becomes my habit. I don't forget. And when life is hard or when I'm confused, I don't have the energy to remember. But habit remembers for me. And then I have that safety, that rock to cling to, that time, and I calm down and I get centered, and the day is so much better. It's a more serious version of the refried beans story. I was too busy to add something. I had the energy to make guacamole from scratch, no problem, but I couldn't remember something new. I did all the usual ingredients with no problem. Make your spiritual practice a usual ingredient, something you do every time. If you have to think about coming to church or not on a particular Sunday, it takes cognitive effort. And when your life is hard, you might not have the energy to do it. And the same goes for a prayer practice or meditation or journaling or whatever it is that keeps you centered. And then you miss, if you're too busy, the time, the community, the inspiration, and the comfort you need most. I hear from folks sometimes, I'm sorry I'm missing church. My life's just too hectic. And I think you are the one who needs this hour of stillness and purpose more than anyone. Don't stop coming. You have to make it a habit. Sunday, you come to church. Not a conscious thought, just what you do. A habit that might save you and remind you who you are and who you wish to be in the midst of the storm, somewhere solid. So today I say throw away your breadcrumbs. Dare to question. Search for the truth, even if you don't find the answers. Dare to question. As a person, as a member of society, as a spiritual pilgrim, throw away your old habits. Become conscious of them. Consider what serves the cause of love and justice and wholeness. Try some new things. Green eggs. Refried beans. Try some new things. New family patterns. New ways of being a community. New ways of being a person of spirit. Keep at it until it becomes your new habit, until you have built your new way, getting stronger at it every day. Until your habits reflect not who you were, but who you wish to become. Throw away your breadcrumbs. The forest of possibility awaits. Let's sing together, Building a New Way. It's 1017 in your teal hymnal, and let's rise in body or spirit.
We are
Please be seated. It's been wonderful to be together for worship this morning. We do live our faith not just for an hour on Sunday, but throughout our lives. So I invite you to explore this month's theme of what does it mean to be a people of tradition? And to ask yourself that question, what habits are worth keeping and which ones do I want to change? If you want to go deeper into the theme, I invite you to join a Spirit Journey group. We've got one more session in May of our groups, and if you're interested, and then we'll start up again in September. So do look for that, but try it out if you haven't this month. In your bulletin, there are a variety of events coming up I want to let you know about and take a look at all of those. In particular, I want to highlight that we have one more week of stewardship gatherings. There are a few this afternoon, one on Wednesday, and then I think one or two more later this week. So take a look at the signups if you haven't already come. How many have already been to a gathering in the last 2 weeks? Yeah, fun, right? You get to meet some people and chat, have a good conversation. So if you haven't yet, please do sign up and come to one of those. Talk about the church, meet some other Unitarian Universalists. A Transform Thursday program is still going on, so there's a program coming up this week, so take a look at that information in the lobby, in the narthex. And we have our Path to Membership class. If you're new with us and interested in finding out more about this church, we're having that class on Thursday the 14th of May and Thursday the 28th of May, two sessions. We'd love to have you join us and find out about our church and what we stand for and how we do things and how to get more involved. In a moment, we're going to take up an offering to support the work of justice and mercy in the world. 80% of what we collect today will go to the Joint Unitarian Universalist Association and Unitarian Universalist Service Committee Relief Fund for Nepal. We've got good relationships with folks there, and the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee has developed an excellent habit of coming into places where there's been a massive natural disaster and finding where the gaps are. Those who are unserved by traditional relief efforts, the disempowered and the disenfranchised, and helping build long-term health in those communities which often are most devastated and where otherwise the recovery might take longest of all. It's great work that they do. We can be very proud to support them and be part of that work. So I hope you will be generous this morning. I invite you next week to join us for worship. Next week, Leslie Mills, a member of this congregation and who's completing her internship at White Bear Unitarian Universalist Church in Minnesota, and I will be sharing the pulpit. We'll be talking about tradition, Unitarian Universalist tradition. What is it that we stand for? What's our tent, and how big is it? It'll be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to it. If you know Leslie, you know that she's a lot of fun, and I think it'll be a great service. So please do come, bring a friend, especially if they're curious about Unitarian Universalism. If you've been wanting to introduce somebody to who we are, next week is a great week to bring them. So please do knock on their door and drag them with you, all right? The offering will now be given and received. I forgot to say one other thing about next week. We're also going to celebrate flower celebration or flower communion next week. It's a regular habit, a tradition of Unitarian Universalism. And so bring a flower or two to share next week from your garden or from your neighbor's garden with their permission, please. And bring that with you next week, and we'll tell you what to do. If you made a chalice, be sure to grab it afterwards, and we'll see you soon. I'm going to extinguish our chalice, but not the light of truth or the warmth of community or the fire of commitment. These things we carry with us until we are together again. And while I do that, I invite you to rise and hold hands together for our benedictions. The words for our benediction from the Reverend John Brigham. Go your ways, knowing not the answers to all things, yet seeking always the answer to one more thing than you know. Let's sing together our song blessing, Go Your Way in Peace. We'll sing it through twice.